there'll be a lot of women listening to this podcast right now, and men who are husbands of women that really want to get a good understanding and almost feel that preparation, but also maybe they are going through perimenopause but don't even realize they are. What are some of the symptoms and the things that we should be looking out for?
The changes in hormone, they just change the game, and they lead to these symptoms. But when you don't know what's going on, it's very destabilizing. And it's not all doom and gloom, and I don't want to scare women. I really think the first thing is to understand the stages of this transition and some of the things to expect. And like you said, you know, maybe how to be a bit more on the front foot than I was. I think we need to find our own way in Australia. You know, the conversation is totally absent in the US. It's normalised in the UK, but in a very compliance policy-driven way. We're going to figure out how does this land and fit in Australia. But the only way we can find out is opening the conversation, I believe.
Melissa, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm really, really excited to have you on, actually. And I think what we're about to speak about today is going to be so beneficial for so many women and men as well in my life currently, but also women that, you know, I haven't yet met and hopefully will meet, because this is a topic that is not discussed enough. It is something that is going to happen to all women. We can't avoid it. And I want to have a really open dialogue with you today, because I really want to understand what we can be doing to support women, give women all the tools they need to work through the menopause and really not go down that spiral, see it as an opportunity like you describe it. So before we get into all of the nitty-gritty, can we just begin with an introduction to who you are, your background, and I guess what got you interested in coaching women through this, you know, point in their life that we're all going to go through, the menopause. So over to you, Melissa. Great to have you on today.
Thanks, Georgie. Well, I guess I've got to be honest and say, you know, I had career confidence and then I lost it for a time there. And like many women, first of all, my name is Melissa McGowan, and you know, if I go back 6 years, I was juggling a big job and a team at work and a team at home and, you know, all the things, and often feeling like I wasn't doing any of them particularly well, but, you know, keeping the balls in the air. And then unknowingly, perimenopause really hit me hard. It hit me on the slightly early side and really started to drop those balls. and really my confidence was one of the key things that eroded. And what I found was accessing good support and understanding what was going on was really challenging. It was time consuming, it was expensive, and it didn't actually provide me with the solutions that, you know, were going to be helpful for me at the time. I ultimately ended up quitting my job as a result. And I was, you know, in my late 40s at this stage. Well, actually I was probably in my mid 40s then, and, you know, arguably at the peak of my career. And I just didn't feel like I had another option. I was the breadwinner for our family. We have 4 children. I didn't have a backup plan, but the only thing I could see was that I needed to step back to really restore my health, because continuing and enduring the symptoms and the stress just wasn't working. So that combined with the, you know, staggering lack of awareness and support and lack of awareness amongst women, let alone doctors and workplaces and everything else, really motivated me and lit a fire in me, and I haven't stopped talking about it since, is, you know, we need to do something about that. So I started, I founded our business, Menno Collective, really to do that, to help women and workplaces build some understanding and change the experience for women and workplaces as well, because women can stay and thrive and be healthy. And as we know, they're a really important workplace demographic and source of talent. So that's what I'm really passionate about. And I could talk about it all day. But yeah, I'm Melissa McGowan, background of 20 plus years in people and culture leadership. I'm a leadership, or I call myself a growth coach, not so much, you know, exec coach. I feel like it's a bit outdated these days. And, you know, I do a lot of work in the menopause place, opening that conversation. It's early for a lot of companies and a lot of women, but just trying to help people embrace it so that we can really normalize menopause and shift it away from the stigma that has not worked for us.
I love that. And thank you for sharing that. And look, what was really interesting in your journey then, where you were just talking about how you ended up having really felt like your only option was to leave and to quit, which is so, so sad. And I think that the frustrating thing is that that's probably how so many women feel, and they get to that point, but it doesn't need to get to that point. And I think that's what I really want to sort of go into today. So if you sort of can reflect back to the Melissa when you were experiencing those symptoms and you were trying to, like you said, juggle all these balls in the air, and you felt like you were doing so many things but doing nothing well, what would you sort of say now with hindsight to that sort of younger Melissa? Because I think that there'll be a lot of women listening to this podcast right now, and men, you know, who are husbands of women, that really want to get a good understanding and almost feel that preparation, but also maybe they are going through perimenopause but don't even realize they are. What are some of the symptoms and the things that we should be looking out for?
And that's why I love that you're opening this conversation, and you mentioned your age earlier. Women in their late 30s need to have this on their radar. That's one of my big learnings. So whilst menopause is not about age, it's essentially about age-related hormone changes and that shift from a woman's reproductive years to her non-reproductive years. You know, so it's not an age thing. It's a hormone thing. But part of the lack of awareness in the past and the stigma around this topic has meant that we've kind of put our heads down and thought we'll deal with that when it pops up. And what we're learning now about perimenopause, which I'll explain in a second, is, you know, these hormonal changes generally start for women in their late 30s and certainly into their early 40s. So if I look back, the normalization of stress is a big issue, right? So just because you can do it doesn't mean it's good for you and that it's not going to catch up with your body. If we combine that with the fact that working in corporate environments and fast-paced, you know, environments where we're driven, ambitious women, we're used to pushing on and we're not necessarily listening to our body. So when the symptoms started popping up, and I'll share what they were. But as you know, I think I just thought, I can get through this. I'm a strong woman, you know. I can like put my head down and push on. And once I actually figured out, you know, 8 doctors later that it was menopause, I don't think that changed my mindset. It was like I can do this. I've had 4 children, you know. I've delivered them the natural way. You know, I can do this. And I was totally disconnected from what my body and mind actually needed. So I kept doing the same things, you know, the wrong sort of exercise, you know, drinking alcohol, too much coffee, all the things that just poured gasoline on my on my symptoms, right? So I would, you know, that's something is like the normalization of stress coming out of, you know, maybe having, if women are having children, you know, they're big, challenging years, they're tiring years, and we sort of get used to carrying so much. If we don't do something to adjust that between that stage and this next stage, we're going to have a more difficult menopause experience, I can pretty much guarantee you. So stress, you know, as one of the neurologists in this space, Dr. Lisa Moscone, an Italian woman who studies menopause's impact on the brain, on the female brain, she has this great sort of line. She says, stress steals our sex hormones. So stress is a big problem, and it's not something that I think we want women to have to figure out on their own, because that just adds stress, doesn't it? It's like when you're stressed and someone tells you, you know, stop stressing so much. It's like, well, you know, what am I actually supposed to do here? So, you know, I think there's a lot there. There's like getting used to receiving and asking for support. There's boundaries. There's how you can actually have good partners in your health, right? That's not as easy as it should be. And then most of all, there's being informed. I did not know, right, about perimenopause. Now, I have a background, an undergrad in applied science and physical education. I worked in health and fitness of 20, you know, plus years coaching and developing others. I like to think I was pretty, you know, kind of finger on the pulse. I did not. This totally sideswiped me. And then in addition, the doctor's saying, oh, you know, it's low iron, or, you know, it's a thyroid issue, or it's just stress, you know. So burnout doesn't happen overnight, neither does perimenopause. And the physiology of those two things is fairly similar. So coming out of the pandemic and all of that, you know, I often, when I'm talking to groups of women, talk about really understanding also the stages of burnout. Because again, if we've, you know, we've got that drive to kind of prove ourselves and do well, and we normalize stress, we start to, you know, neglect some of our basic needs, you know, right at the bottom of that foundation that we know we need, you know, drinking enough water, getting your sleep, moving your body, you know, those things matter. So if you can arrive at this stage with rituals that are actually supporting you recharge your batteries every day. And so back then, me running half marathons when I was already incredibly depleted, but I was fine, you know, and I could do it. But then all that did was drain my system further. And, you know, we often hear this from women that suddenly their weight changes and these things, and they're like, hang on, but I'm doing all the exercise I've always done and it's not having the same effect, you know, what's going on. So, yeah, perimenopause, it really is that time around menopause. It's in the lead up to menopause. So if you think about menopause, it's really important for the women and the men listening to understand that it is a transition. You know, and when we talk about transitions in the careers or the workplace, we know that it's a time of change, and transitions, you know, take time. And generally, you know, the transition from that sort of reproductive stage to the non-reproductive stage, you know, whilst on average takes 7 years, it's often 10 plus years, because it's the changes that slowly start to happen in the lead up to the final event, where you have had no period for 12 months and that day is menopause. And then for the rest of your life, you are postmenopausal, right? But those perimenopause years are the most symptomatic, the most challenging. And like I often say, it generally starts before you know it's begun. So most women think, oh, come on, you know, come on, Melissa, what do you mean? You've dropped a ball. Like they're hard on themselves. They don't see it there. They overlook it. They can even, you know, we can be in denial about some of that stuff because it's pretty uncomfortable to deal with. We normalize it and we keep going. And then, you know, our body starts to put up more and more, you know, symptoms, aka warning flag, like signs, like, okay, how about this? How about, you know, for me, it was like, a lot of acne, you know, then a lot of hair loss. And, you know, my hairdresser was like, oh, it's fine. You know, it's just kind of this. Or, you know, my doctor would be like, oh, it's fine. I was like, no, it's not fine for me. That when my hair is like cut, like I don't want to wash it because it's coming out in it being clumps, and I had all that baby hair growing, you know, everywhere. And one of my four kids got head lice. And I remember I had to do that freaking combing. And I'm like, literally ripping out, you know, my hair's just falling out. But everyone tells you it's fine. You know, I couldn't fit into my jeans. Then there were other things that were less common, like chronic sinus infections. I just kept getting, you know, probably because I was run down, but also now I understand that, you know, the drop in estrogen and progesterone causes so many things to go awry. It's like the puzzle pieces have just been messed up and they can't quite, you know, fit back together. So I started to get sinus infections all the time. I had dizziness. I mean, I was at the front of a room leading a leadership, you know, the development training. And I'm standing there and suddenly I'm feeling like, you know, the room is spinning, like back in the old days when you had too many drinks and you'd lie down and the, you know, like, whoa. And I'm like,
such,
oh my God.
Such an awful feeling, that, yeah.
Corporate audience. And I'm like, I had to leave and go and like sit down because, you know, I think I've fainted maybe once in my life, but I had this vertigo thing going on, this kind of dizziness, which was really scary. Additionally, like the, you know, with brain fog is another term that comes up, this catch-all term to describe things like, you know, memory lapses or just challenges in your cognition, right? So you're used to being someone who, you know, knows what they're talking about, has built their credibility in their career, and there you are, all eyes are on you. You're in the middle of a sentence where you're influencing a group of people and you literally just lose the data point, or you lose the thread of what you were talking about and everyone's just looking at you. Then you start to feel a bit of stress and, of course, oh, a hot flush comes on. So then you're dripping like off your face, you know, and your whole body's on fire. So I was experiencing all of this working with majority men in the exec, right? I was the only female. So you're just trying to silence it. You're just like, you know, so there was all these, I think, that sleep, you know, 2:14 a.m. awake again, worrying about, you know, everything. And these are the things that estrogen, and well, the role of estrogen, progesterone is different, but the changes in hormone, they just change the game and they lead to these symptoms. But when you don't know what's going on, you know, it's kind of very destabilizing. So that's why I love that we're kind of talking about it. And it's not all doom and gloom, and I don't want to scare women, you know, we can talk about that as well. But yeah, I really think the first thing is to understand these stages of this transition and some of the things to expect. And like you said, you know, maybe how to be a bit more on the front foot than I was.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And yeah, I don't want this podcast to be all doom and gloom because, you know, it's not something that I want women to go away going, oh my God, you know, if they're not quite there yet, that's not something to look forward to. Because I think also I was reading a lot of your blogs and we're going to come on to other things that, you know, one, how we can prepare, but also, you know, some of the benefits and some of the opportunities that also might come our way as well with it. But what was really interesting, and I didn't know this, is that, so if when you're perimenopausal, you don't actually have the symptom of your period stopping. So I thought that was when it all began, when you stopped having periods. I personally didn't realize, again, because this isn't something that's common knowledge or spoken about amongst women, that wasn't the case at all. Is that actually it's going to be the build up first, and that actually is probably some of the worst times before your periods actually even stop. So I didn't know that. So that's really interesting just to understand that, because I can imagine when you were going through all of those symptoms, you were like, what is happening to me? What is going on? This is, you know, I don't feel myself. And like you said, you know, you just kept on pushing through, kept on trying to disguise it. I think and that's what we all do, right? I think we're so bad at, I'm talking from my own experience now, of actually listening to our body and slowing down. I am the world's worst at that. I was quite sick on Tuesday and I was led on the sofa and I honestly absolutely despised it with an absolute passion, and I was trying to force myself to get up and do things, and I was like, Georgina, sometimes you just need to lie down and listen to your body and just nap, just sleep. And that's all I needed. I just needed rest. But I am so bad at that, which is why I was really excited to have this conversation with you today, because, you know, I want to be best prepared and ready for what's to come. So let's just say, you know, there's a woman listening to this right now.
That voice, right? Like, I just want to say, well done for that self-compassionate voice.
Yes.
That said, actually, this is what you need. You know, if we can listen to her, like, that's the opportunity. And that is something I teach nearly every woman that we work with, because we're not, you know, we're used to meeting the needs of others, and we get really good at that. And, you know, it's an important role we play. But I know it's that old cliche of, like, where are we on the list? Self-compassion is asking ourselves what we need at a time where we are challenged or struggling.
Yeah.
And then actually listening to that voice. And it's counterintuitive sometimes, right?
100%. And especially right now, you know, with myself, I had to cancel a podcast, which I hate doing. I hate letting people down. So I was led on the sofa. I started to feel really guilty and just, oh, you know, this is why are you sick, you know, and all these sort of thoughts. But I thought, you know, that's not helping me right now. What I need is rest. What I need is, you know, a hot water bottle, a warm tea, and maybe some trash TV for the day. And then tomorrow I'll wake up and I'll be back to my normal self, which I was, but just giving myself the day, observing the thoughts in my mind and just choosing to, like you say, have some self-compassion was definitely the route I went through. But old me, say 5 years ago, would have pushed through. I'll have done that podcast. I would have pushed myself to go for a walk or go to the gym that day or something. And I would have ended up then making myself even sicker in the process and it dragging on for days because I just didn't take the day just to rest and listen to my body. So that's a really important lesson for all women. And I think especially women who are ambitious and who are very career driven, it's go, 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 go. And we've got to learn to listen to our bodies. Like you said, it's so, so important. So look, obviously all of those symptoms sound awful. I'm sure my mum won't mind me sharing this. Love you, mum. But I remember quite vividly as a teenager when my mum went through the menopause, and I really did see a shift in her quite dramatically, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I don't think she really knew what was going on, and she ended up going to the doctors, and she was put on HRT. And that was a real turning point for her when she went on to that medication.
Yeah.
Look, that's not the answer for every single person, but that medication does exist. I'd love to know if you've sort of done any research around any natural remedies that people can sort of take. What's your thoughts on HRT? Like, what are some of the things that can help counteract some of these symptoms so we can still continue to function and be the best that we can be every day.
Yeah. Well, again, well done, because your self-compassion case study there just proves exactly what the research shows, which is, you know, we bounce back faster if we are self-compassionate. Yeah. So it's like you're on the path. Your mum's experience is common and, you know, similar to my mum's until the Women's Health Initiative study in year 2000 kind of put some strong false claims out into the media about the link between breast cancer and HRT, and mum chucked hers in the bin and the wheels fell back off again. So I think when we talk about the symptoms, it's important for everyone to understand that, you know, there's physical symptoms and the psychological symptoms, and the psychological symptoms around, you know, mood, you know, or from, you know, we hear anger, rage, you know, it's often sadness. You know, just unexplained sadness, you know. So if you're not sleeping that well, you know, if you're predisposed already to a bit of anxiety, you know, depression, these are very common, self-doubt. So we hear this all the time. It's like, I can't make a decision. You know, I can't. And then I second guess myself if I do. You know, so we've got women who are in very, you know, seasoned women in senior roles suddenly crushed with self-doubt or, you know, and loss of self-belief that they haven't experienced to this level before. I hadn't had anxiety before the changes of perimenopause, and it's, you know, it's not uncommon to have like heart palpitations with hot flushes and you sort of think, oh my God, what's going on? So the psychological symptoms, you know, can often be harder to deal with, I guess, because the impact, you know, they're quite connected, and it can really put an impact across your whole, you know, sort of lifestyle, I guess. And yet once we start to get to those with a range of treatment options, you know, the physical things often improve as well. So, look, HRT, you know, well, the first thing I guess I want to say is we base the treatment off what's going on for every woman, and that is different. So whilst there's some commonalities across, you know, the symptoms we hear of more frequently, like hot flushes, mood swings, these kinds of things, you know, irregular cycle, There are some commonalities for sure, but every woman's body and mind goes through this transition differently. So it is important to have like a plan that's personalised for you. And at the moment in Australia, the number one prescribed treatment for menopause is antidepressants. And that is because doctors are not able to spend the time with women to understand what's actually going on. So sometimes antidepressants are required, but not it should not be the first line of defense like it is right now. And women are leaving sort of feeling not really, you know, heard. They leave with that script. They don't really know what's going on. And then they don't sort of continue to sort of experience symptoms and not feel like themselves. So understanding if you're in perimenopause is kind of the first place to start. And for most women, that's not about having a blood test. It's one of the kind of myths out there because your hormones move around all the time. And a blood test is not always an accurate picture of what's going on. What is more accurate is actually what's going on for you and your experience of it. So, you know, I can share the link with you, but, you know, we have a checklist, a perimenopause checklist and some tips just to help women kind of either be informed about what, you know, to look for. And if it comes up, they know, that's what that is, you know, or they can identify and connect some dots on what's already maybe going on for them and start to track that a bit, because that information, that data is going to be the most helpful for your doctor to figure out what your treatment options are. And there are, you know, there's HRT, there's other medical treatment options, and then there's non-medical treatment options. So HRT, you know, is a gold standard, and it is very effective for a number of symptoms for many women. For certain reasons, it's not an option for everyone. Yeah, so it's something that needs to be kind of considered. It's great that the awareness is growing, and certainly in the UK, you know, it seems like we're really normalising the conversation in the workplace and access to HRT, which is great. It still needs consideration amongst, you know, the other options for each woman. So then, like I said, there's other medical, you know, if HRT is not an option, there are other medical options. And then there's what I call the lifestyle levers, which are really what we can all pull and really kind of reevaluate lifestyle and confront ourselves with, you know, things like our exercise, certain supplements, nutrition, without going mad, without giving up carbs and all of this radical stuff, right? Most women arrive at this stage having done enough radical stuff. We don't need more diets. We don't need more cleanses, blah, blah, blah. You know, we actually need to kind of meet our own needs in a way that is more fit to how our body is changing. So an example of that would be, you know, starting, you know, weights training or resistance training.
Yes.
If that's not mm-hmm. something that's already in your repertoire. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because most women do experience weight gain. Mm-hmm. Not many of them love that. Stress is a factor. Yeah. The impact on our metabolism with the hormonal changes is a factor, and, you know, we lose muscle mass. So to help our bones, our mind and our bodies, you know, resistance training is a really good option. There's so many small changes we can make in our lifestyle that are not medical that can be hugely supportive. It kind of brings you back to you. At the end of the day, a lot of the mm-hmm. stuff is kind of this inner work. You know, it's not out there. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we can't outsource this one.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. Yeah, I completely agree with you there about resistance training. It's something that, I was very very lucky that I grew up in a family that always went to the gym. So it's just kind of been my norm. Mum went to the gym, dad went to the gym. So I've always had a gym membership since I can remember. And I've always sort of lifted weights. And I do really believe that as women age, it is so important for our bone mass. You know, as we age, that definitely reduces, of course. So it's really important for muscle mass, our bone mass, and just our general well-being to do some form of resistance training. Obviously, you know, if you can walk, get some fresh air, work, you know, get out in nature, all of these things will help so much. Obviously, I think my mum used to love like Pilates and yoga as well for like her mind and body connection as well. So there are so many things we can do from more of that holistic point of view. But it's so distressing to me to know that the number one drug being diagnosed for women through the menopause is an antidepressant. That is just so disappointing. That's where we're at in this world of modern medicine, of this world of knowledge, that we're just giving out these antidepressants. That just, this just feels so unempowering to me.
Yeah.
And I think that, like you just said then, it's like we do need to take, you know, I guess a little level of responsibility that this is our body. Our bodies are going through a change, but we can do a lot internally as well. Like things like, I guess, for stress, meditation. Something I swear by. I think you're lucky to experience anxiety later on in life. I had it terribly in my 20s. But I'm also very grateful for that, because what it taught me is some tools to deal with it. And meditation is one of them. Yoga is another one. Exercise, absolutely vital for me. Good diet, supplementation. So these are all things that I now do on a daily, weekly basis to ensure that I do optimize my health and my well-being. So that's sort of from that sort of holistic side. So exercise, resistance training, you know, managing your stress, getting enough sleep, obviously looking into things like HRT, if that's something that, you know, is the right for you and the right pathway for you. I'd love to go into now the whole working world for women going through the change, because I was reading some of the stats on your blog, and it struck me just how, what an untapped talent we're missing out of in the workforce. Because I read that you wrote, menopaused age women are the fastest growing demographic in Australia. There's so much untapped talent, yet 50% of companies are reluctant to hire them, which I found quite confronting. So in your experience, why is that? And also, why do you think it's important for companies to be supporting women as well, and what can workforces do to support women through this change?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go past ageism.
Yeah,
you know, gendered ageism as a factor here, unconsciously, of course.
Yeah.
So the demographic is there. We've got more women, you know, participating in the workforce than ever. And that particular age group, sort of 45 to 54, is a really significant one and fast growing. So the talent is there. You know, the question is, why aren't we tapping into it? You know, and I think that's a really, you know, that's a complex one and interesting to look at. Well, what's happened, you know, downstream, you know, before now, that is contributing to that. But I do think that ageism is a factor for men and women. I hear that often. And then the gendered overlay on top of that. So with that dynamic playing out, the last thing most women want to do is start talking about menopause at work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because there's already fear about being, you know, labeled, or like if I go back, you know, I end up telling my boss what was going on, but that went well, but it's a risk, right? I understand, and I also felt that, like, I didn't want to be perceived as not coping or as weak or needing, you know, special attention, you know, because I was the woman in the team. Oh, and now she's going through menopause as well. So these things combine, and, you know, different research showing different things. So, you know, 80% of women are not comfortable disclosing their menopause status at work because they fear they won't be, you know, promoted, supported, hired, whatever, that they'll be labelled. And I think we need to disrespect that that's where we're at in how menopause is perceived in society. And it's a little bit like when we first started talking more and more about, you know, gender diversity in this country. There was a bit of denial about the fact that we needed to have it on the radar, like it was important for, and ethnicity the same. Oh, yeah, the US do that. The other countries do that. But we're good here in Australia. You know, so, mm-hmm. And then sometimes I used to hear women saying, you know, I don't want the job just because I'm a woman. And I, you know, I get that. But at the end of the day, if we're going to move the dial on representation of women, then if we have two people and they're both great for the job, I'm going to go for the woman because mm-hmm. that is what we're trying to shift the needle on. And that's inherently uncomfortable. So normalizing things, like look at mental health now, it's very normal, acceptable and encouraged to seek support. I just mm-hmm. had someone the other day tell me that a very senior leader in their organization shared their recent experience of anxiety. And she was like, wow, that would not have happened 5 or 10 years ago. So no. I love Are You Okay Day in Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the simplicity of just asking, are you okay? And when we talk about menopause in the workplace, you know, I think let's look at where we can start, where we're not putting it upon the women and we're not creating further stigma, but mm-hmm. also as women and men and influencers and decision makers in the workplace, how can we nudge it along so that we're not colluding in things staying like they are? That's the risk that I see if we sort of go down the path of like this is, you know, we're worried about discrimination, so we're not going to talk about it in the workplace. I don't think that's going to move the needle. So we need to find some ways to do that that are inclusive and they're non-threatening, where we can just understand some facts. And part of that is understanding that, you know, this is not going to impact a woman forever. It's a stage of her life, and that if she's working in an environment where, you know, there's a lack of support, there's too much stress, a lack of sort of empathy, she's going to have a worse experience. Her symptoms are going to be worse. That's going to lead to a loss of productivity, you know, confidence, and maybe even a loss of talent walking out the door. And I hear from women all the time. So whilst 10%. Is the number from the Australasian Menopause Society of women leaving their jobs due to menopause symptoms in Australia. You know, there's a lot of work coming out of the UK to show that that's potentially higher over there. And I think it's probably higher here too, because like me, I didn't make a big announcement about that. You know, you make your decision and you kind of go out quietly. Yeah. So I think it's probably happening more than we think. And for some women, only in retrospect going, oh my God, That was because I was going through the depths of perimenopause and I didn't even realize, you know, and I was questioning everything. So yeah, the workplace conversation, I think it shouldn't be up to the women. It shouldn't be up to HR, but I do believe in the context of where a company is at, it's a great platform to raise some awareness and provide some resources and some support. Like had I seen something or just heard something at work, I possibly would have connected dots earlier. Like I could have lost, you know, I call them my hot, lost, sad, lost years. You know, like there was a good couple of those years where I was down in the doldrums. Like I might have connected the dots myself ahead of the doctor if I'd been involved in something like that. And some workplaces come at that differently, like where they have women's networks or groups, maybe it's, you know, starting there. You know, others are linking it into existing workplace strategies around either talent or inclusion or even workplace wellbeing, you know, rather than it being a sort of big sort of standalone thing. But look, I understand the reluctance from some women. I really do. I also think we need to just step into that discomfort a little bit like we have with mental health and just start to move the needle, because menopause is so strongly correlated to mental health as well. That's another great way to connect it in. So I believe there's benefits for firstly the women. If knowledge is power, if they understand a bit more what's going on, they can get the support they need. it's going to be a win for them, for their family, for their, you know, for their economic situation, for their contribution at work. It's going to be a win for their workplace as well. So that's kind of my approach, but I think it needs consideration. I don't think everyone needs a menopause policy. The UK has really taken that approach. I think we need to find our own way in Australia. You know, the conversation is totally absent in the US. It's normalized in the UK, but in a very sort of bit more of a compliance policy-driven way.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to figure out how does this land and fit in Australia. Mm-hmm. But the only way we can find out is opening the conversation, I believe.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you're so right. I think that just some resources to start with, just to go, oh, okay, is that a symptom of it? Because honestly, I remember just sort of the only thing I can sort of compare it to is when I first ever had a panic attack at work and I had no idea what was happening to me. I thought I was having a heart attack because my heart was beating so fast. I began to sweat and I didn't have a clue what was going on, but there was no one to turn to at that work to say, I'm feeling quite off. I don't know what's happening. And if there was just some resources or something, I had to sort of go and find this all out myself. And then I came to realize, oh God, that was a panic attack. Oh God, that was linked to anxiety. Wow. And that sort of then put me on a journey of discovery and trying to get to the bottom of it all. But I think that's it. Knowledge is power. And if we just have these sort of open dialogues or, you know, there are some resources or a support group or something that people can sort of turn to at work, just so they also know as well, Melissa, that they're not alone. I think yeah, this is the thing huge. That's so, so important for women to know yeah. that they are not alone. You are not, I can guarantee you, if you're in the workforce right now, there will be multiple other women going through very similar things to you. And if you're open and honest, just like, God, I'm just had a hot flush, or God, I'm feeling off today, or whatever. It's just going to go, that vulnerability is going to then open up a dialogue and that safety to sort of go, have those conversations with your coworkers as well and sort of have that support at work. I think that is just so important because as soon as you know I'm not alone, there's other people going through this, you don't then feel just so isolated from the rest of the world. And that could be the difference between you leaving your job or staying in your job. And that could be the difference between you feeling the confidence to go for that promotion or not. Knowing that you've got other people in the organization backing you, supporting you through it as well. I think that is so, so important.
Your analogy there is such a good one around your process that you went through. Like, what is this? Oh my God, terrifying. You know, when I missed 3 meetings one week and I'm like, I rang my husband and said, I think I'm literally losing it. Like,
you know,
and then you went through that sort of discovery and, you know, that takes time and energy, right? So for busy women, like, you know, having to do the research and figure this out, it's like, how can we short circuit that a little bit? Because we know women turn to their girlfriends first, but not everyone's experience is the same. When I run like webinars and stuff with companies, for that reason you just said about not feeling alone, I'm always, always pleasantly surprised. At first of all, the chat just goes nuts because people they're sharing. Mm. But every time there's at least one person who says, I had no idea that's why I was experiencing, I just literally, you know, and so there'll be like tears sometimes of like, I thought, you know, that I was doing something wrong. And now I'm just, everything you've said is just kind of like you've just been speaking to me, you know. So what an amazing amplification if you can access some, you know, a bit of a tribe and some support. And then knowing that women turn to their girlfriends first.
Yeah.
You know, the more informed we become, the more informed we become. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that is the advantage. I've always thought this of being a woman. We can look each other in the eyes and feel that connection. We, you know, we bond, we chat, we go deep with each other, right? Like we can just build these strong connections and these strong relationships. That's innate in us to have those strong connections to other women. But for whatever reason, and I want to see this change so much, I think because of modern society, maybe feeling lack of opportunity in the workforce, like we sometimes feel like we're competing against one another. And I'm like, let's not do that. Let's collaborate. Let's support one another. Let's bring each other up. Let's elevate each other's voices, because that's how we're going to win. That's how we're all going to thrive in the future of work. coming together, supporting one another, not trying to tear each other down, not judging one another if we're having an off day, checking in, going, are you okay? You know, I noticed in that meeting that, you know, you weren't quite as on as you usually are. Is everything okay? And just having some compassion for, yes, ourselves, but each other. That's what I would really like to see happening more in the workforce, not instead gossiping and chatting about each other behind our back. And unfortunately, Nyssa, it still does go on, and it goes on at all ages. And I thought I left that behind in high school, but unfortunately, we didn't. So can we all just, ladies, listen to this? Can we all support each other, please? Because we need each other more now than ever. The world is changing at a rapid pace, and if we don't work together on this, we could seriously get left behind. And that is my ultimate fear, which is why I do this podcast, to speak to people like you, Melissa.
Well, totally. We need the sisterhood.
Yes.
We had a client who's in a very senior role with a big bank, and her manager actually did just what you said then. So, yeah, I've noticed in the last few meetings you have not been contributing like I kind of would expect. Like, what's going on? And she had that split second of like, am I going to be honest or am I going to like bullshit my way through this? And she said, you know what? I couldn't remember what we talked about at the meeting before. And I think I'm getting some brain fog issues due to perimenopause. And I just suddenly just felt myself like I just held back. And so that led to a whole thing going on at that particular bank in that organization around kind of this concept of allies and champions and just raising awareness in that split moment. Now, I think because she was senior, because she was candid, because her manager was a, you know, what I call a menopause-friendly manager, but really it's that foundation of psychological safety, because you can do that with, you know, with a colleague. Anything that helps build that psychological safety that's ultimately going to make it okay for me to just say, oh, when I'm tripping, you know, having the hot flush, if I choose, you know, for me to just say, it's that stage of life, to be able to just be frank and sort of somewhat, you know, flippant about it if I want to, that is what the research is showing us has the least impact on a woman's credibility, perceived credibility as a leader, is if she can be honest. Yeah, not if her colleague says it for her, or not if she sort of just says, oh, I'm just a bit hot. So herein lies the catch again, because if we don't have an environment where we feel on balance we can take that risk and that there's a degree of, you know, a good foundation of psych safety, mm-hmm. we're going to hold back, aren't we? So I think that's where the sisterhood comes in again.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And look, we can't honestly afford to lose our female workforce, because there's a massive talent shortage as it is. And if more women exit the workforce, we are literally going to be, it's just not going to be a good thriving economy in Australia. So we need to maintain our women at work, and therefore we need to create systems, policies and procedures that support women at all ages and have these open dialogues and these conversations to make sure that people aren't going unnoticed and things aren't getting swept under the carpet, and people, like you say, feel that safety at work to show up as their authentic selves and be able to be honest and not like, not be honest and just like, you know, poor me, you know, women don't want attention. We don't want, you know, that we don't want almost like people feeling sorry for us. We just need them to know that like, I've got this. I have got this.
Yeah.
But you know, if I'm slightly off in a meeting or if I'm not as on with a client, you know, it's, this is what it is. So cut me a bit of slack. I've got it all under control, but I just need you to be aware that I'm going through something at the minute, and a little bit of support would go a long way. Thanks so much.
Brilliant, right? And now can we just all get on with it? And I just feel like until we normalize it, we can't say that, but that's exactly what we need. Yeah.
Correct. You know, just an open dialogue, you know, a bit of practical, you know, being practical, being logical, not being overly emotional about it as well. Because, you know, I know a lot of women that we don't want to play the victim. We don't want, like I said, the whole sob story. It's going to happen to us all. We need to support each other and just accept and surrender this is happening to us, not live in denial, and, you know, work our way through it together. And hopefully the workforces will come along with us to support as much as possible. So I want to sort of finish on a positive, Melissa. We've spoken a lot about the negatives. But what in your experience has been some positives? Because here you are, you're running your own consultancy, you're coaching, you have really turned this around. You've turned this into a huge opportunity. You're, you know, sat with me now on a podcast speaking openly about it. That takes a level of self-esteem, confidence, self-belief. So it's not all doom and gloom. And I'm looking at you now, you're glowing, you're gorgeous. So what is the positives of going through the menopause, and what are some things that maybe we could even look forward to?
It's such an important point to bring to this conversation, isn't it? It is not the end, right? No. Menopause is not the end. It really is a tunnel, not a cave, yeah?
Mm.
However, there's kind of an opportunity and a mindset that not everyone is going to take here around what can be on the other side for you. And because, you know, when we talk about the hard stuff of menopause, you know, yeah, that's painful. But another word we often hear is suffering, isn't it? And suffering is when we layer over our perceptions of what we're experiencing. So if we're feeling like, you know, like woe is me, you know, where like I see some of these Facebook groups and it's all very, you know, can we just bring the retirement age to 50? And I'm like, no, you know, there's sort of this collusion in kind of misery and a humor around kind of wine and whatever that just doesn't land for me. But so I think we have, it can be really tough. Like when you're not sleeping well, you know, all of that, it's hard to hear someone say, and this can be transformative. You're kind of like, I just want to bop you on the head.
Yeah.
But I really want to say that
yeah,
again, it's a transition. Transitions take time. You know, whatever analogy you've used in your workplaces around navigating change, you know, there's some fairly strong correlations here. Like the William Bridges model on transition, where you're going from one side of the riverbank to the other and you're in the middle there like frantically trying to, you know, that's kind of the perimenopause phase. But what I want to give you visibility to is kind of what's on the other riverbank there, that as you like embrace and kind of own this experience rather than sort of put your head down. A lot of women my age, I'm 49 now, so I'm like, you know, four and a half, nearly five years post-menopause. A lot of my peers don't want to talk about this. They're like, oh, no, I'm not there yet. I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. Like, you're so in perimenopause. It's not funny. But they don't want to talk about it. So we can try and deny it, but then we're not going to be able to kind of own it and embrace it. Now, if you own it and embrace it, you're more likely to get the support you need and make some of those lifestyle, just those little degree turns, not changing everything at once, nothing too radical, not making any big career decisions, you know, when you're down in the doldrums. But what you can do is actually take advantage of the natural changes that occur in your brain through this change. And this is what I think is really interesting, is one of the other neurologists in this space, they show that the mum brain actually starts to change. Those caring chemicals that have had us have kids and raise kids start to shift. And really what that allows is a little bit more for you. So we often see women become, you know, more direct, shift into a new purpose, new friends, new career, new marriage maybe, right? There's this sense of growth that comes on the other side that we let things go. I hear all the time women saying, you know, I just don't give it an F about so many things anymore. I just did a post the other day about how have you grown and developed through menopause? And these were some of the things that came through, is that it's a new era for women and energy is back, belief is back, and there's a sense of opportunities to be explored with an acceptance of self and caring in a really good way, a little bit less about everyone else and what everyone else thinks, holding a few more boundaries and being a little bit more focused on you. And we need those leaders in the workplace. So there's lots of really good things that can come through this transition for the women who, you know, take that ownership and get the support they need to manage their menopause symptoms is really where it starts. Yeah.
Fantastic. And I think that's the key, isn't it? It's like preparation is key, talking about it, not living in denial, but also yes. Something that you said at the start then, which I think is so important, is making sure you're surrounding yourself with the right people. Don't go to Facebook groups where it's all doom and gloom and everyone's playing the victim and playing the sob card. Stay well away from that.
And there's a lot of misinformation on those groups, yes. You know, not yes. evidence-based stuff. It's, yes. Yeah.
People probably out. Even taking advantage of totally. Women going through the time as well. So just stay away from them. Surround yourself with a really good network of incredible women. Sign up for your newsletter on LinkedIn and connect with you, Melissa, as an absolute essential, I would say. And just, yeah, make sure that you are seeking the support and the help early on, and just know that you do not need to go through this alone. Look, you've honestly made me feel quite calm about it all. You know, I've always had this slight thing of like, you know, God, you know, not looking forward to that. But to be honest, I think it's just, like I say, knowledge is power. It's embracing it. It's, you know, growing through it. I think that's the thing. It's your perception, isn't it? It's like how you look at things, your frame of reality, and just making sure that you go in it with a surrender mindset, but also going, there is going to be growth that comes of this, and I get to decide yes. how I show up every day. You know, that's empowerment, right? I still get to decide how I move, how I think, you know, how I get through this, and also not being a hero and pushing through and making sure you're also getting the support and asking for the support when needed as well, I think is absolutely imperative as well. But Melissa, where can I send people to find out more about you, your work? And yeah, if people want to reach out to you with any questions or support, where can they go?
Yeah, well, look, we love supporting women because, like I say, midlife is already pretty jam-packed. Mm-hmm. So to have to figure this out on your own on top of it is just, you know, often frustrating and confusing and time-consuming. So I think, you know, there's lots of things, but really I would appeal to people. I think the best place to start is understanding more about what perimenopause is, how you know, and what you can do. So I'm going to direct women to that resource, which is at www.freemenoguide.com. And you can, you know, download that checklist and some tips that some of the things we've talked about today, actually. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that tells you how you can reach out to us for any support from there.
Perfect. Send that through to me and I'll make sure that that's linked in the podcast today for anyone who wants to go and check that out and read that. But Melissa, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for giving up your time today and coming onto the podcast. I really hope that everyone who has listened to this today has come away with some knowledge, some understanding, and please reach out to Melissa for any more resources and support. But Melissa, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate you.
Thanks to you. I love that you're opening this conversation in a really proactive and positive way. Well done.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.